2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another week of the Cape Cod Pod. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. I am here live in studio at lovely Lowell Park in Kituat, Massachusetts. We are actually recording this podcast on site in the Cape Cod League for a game. I'll be down here all week. So, Peter, welcome to the show. It's the first time we've recorded in person, and we're coming off the All-Star game. So we've seen each other a few times over the last couple of days.
I was going to say, we've had a few in-person meetings. It's our first live show, so to speak. As Jeff mentioned, we're in Kituat. We'll be taking Kituat and Brewster tonight, and I'm fired up to do it live. It'll be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we got one of the bigger events of the season, if not one of the biggest event, maybe the Cape Cod season. Now that Fenway Day is a little bit different than it used to be. But the All-Star game took place this Saturday in Harwich at beautiful White House Field, which was great because there was plenty of parking. It was a little bit easier to move around than it was in Wareham. I had the whole family out there, all my kids, and was kind of enjoying the day. Beautiful weather. Good home run derby. You know, Tibbs certainly showed out. But what was your takeaway from sort of the day, not necessarily the game, but the All-Star game day? Because I think it's more about the total festivities, kids out there getting autographs. I know my little guy was running around trying to capture every player who's ever played in the 2023 Cape Cod League with an autograph. But yeah, we got to see some great talent as well.
Yeah, I mean, All-Star games in general, I think, are a lot of fun. You mentioned the festivities. It's kind of a laid-back environment for the players. You get the best of the best of the best, kind of all under one roof, on one field, so to speak. And they can kind of let loose and get to know each other on a personal level, maybe make some new friendships. And it was a lot of fun to watch kind of the best college baseball players that are still playing right now. All in one game. And the home run derby was outstanding. James Tibbs took home the title. Hunter Hines actually hit the most total home runs of any player. He had 13, but the way that the derby is formatted, Tibbs was able to take home the title. But just the day as a whole was a lot of fun. Harwich did a great job. The Cape League did a great job, as they always do. And it made for a really fun time.
Yeah, and I think it's like Hines was like the victim of the home run derby circumstance that we've seen so many times, where somebody, you know, mashes in the first round when he had 8 in the first round, then 5 in the second, you know, and ultimately loses because somebody had a better second round, even though he had the better, you know, total numbers. I thought an interesting wrinkle, and I don't think I remember this from last season, I think this is new this year, was the extra allotted time in the home run derby for the length of each home run.
Yeah, I think that was a new one.
I think it was new. Yeah, 30 seconds or whatever.
Yeah, shout out to Baseball Cloud for that, because they are a new sponsor in the league this year. You can track the distances a little better. Last year they didn't use TrackMan, but this year we had Baseball Cloud, and so I think a couple of guys got the bonus 30 seconds for launching two or more home runs over 420 feet. Tibbs did it. And unsurprisingly, Hunter Hines did it. Brody Dinay,
yeah.
I trust Baseball Cloud. Brody Dinay hit a couple that looked like they were well over 420 feet, but he didn't get the extra 30. But nonetheless, a new wrinkle added in there that made it more fun to follow and intriguing.
Yeah, and if you know, you know, Harwich's field at all, these guys were, you know, Tibbs, Dinay, and Hines all hit balls like into the tree line, like the ball landed among the trees. So it was beyond that sort of, you know, like 20-foot space behind the walls there. Yeah, they were nukes. And I was actually sitting back there. I was in center field with my kids, you know, my little guy who's actually sitting in with us, was chasing him around. So I was kind of watching as everything was coming in. It was like crazy to see some of those, because Harwich isn't the easiest home run park, you know, especially in comparison to like Wareham, where they had it last year. Orleans to dead center, where I saw it in 2019, is impossible. We did see Tyler Hardman, I think, hit one out there just about. But the lines in, like down the lines, the poles are very short in Orleans. It's a very unusual old school Fenway Park sort of setup in terms of the way, you know, the lines are set up. So it was really interesting just to see those guys, you know, absolutely mash.
Yeah. Now, oh, I was going to say, to your point, like what made it all the more impressive with Hines hitting 13, Tibbs is 12 total. Donay hit 11 of the West Division's 13 total home runs, which was one of the most impressive stats of the day, I think. But to your point, Harwich is notoriously the biggest graveyard out here on the Cape. To dead center, it's 400. It plays like it's 450. Down the lines are 330, and the gaps are really deep. And so for the fact that, especially for these right-handed hitters who are hitting balls into the trees, namely really just Brody Donay, the tree line in left is, I'd say, 20 to 30 yards beyond the fence in left field. And Donay was hitting tanks into the tree lines all day. And then with Hines and Tibbs, they hit a couple off the scoreboard in deep right center. Yep. So a really impressive showing in a not homer-friendly park.
Yeah, exactly. Now, let's move on to the game, right? Got a nine-inning game. I would say that there were a couple of tight moments there, I think in the fifth and then the seventh inning. There were, I think, two runners on for the East Division. In the fifth inning, they were down by, I think, 2-1 or 3-1 at that point. And they ended up, you know, the West, as they had did all day, got out of a very tight situation. And then in the seventh inning, they actually had the bases loaded with no outs. And I think it was Ethan Lampeter, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Was able to get out of that situation with a strikeout and then a ground ball out, double play, inning over, no runs crossed the plate. At that point, it was a 4-1 game. I remember looking over at my son here and saying, they got the bases loaded, there's no outs. If there's a home run right here, East is up. So that was a tight moment in the game. After that, the final couple of innings, especially, I think it was the top of the ninth was when Donay hits that double, West just runs away with it. 7-1, you look back on it over the first three innings. I think they were all clean innings, actually, for the West Division as well. Their pitching staff didn't give up a hit until Oyama sort of legged one out in the fourth inning. So not a lot of offense initially. But as for the game, you know, I thought when you looked at the West lineup, not to say that the East lineup didn't have power and guys that you're interested in, guys are going to be picks. I thought that West lineup, that starting lineup, was loaded from top to bottom, you know.
It was stacked. And kind of like to your point, the West Division this season has been, I'd say at least record-wise, a lot stronger than the East. Bourne, who's currently in fourth place right now in the West, they're 35 points. If they were in the East, they'd be in second. So I think it just speaks to the depth of the West. And, I mean, up and down the lineup, 11 different players had hits. Derek Bender took home the MVP. He was 2-for-3 with an RBI. I was actually surprised it wasn't Brody Donay, because I think in terms of an individual at bat, he had the biggest impact of anyone in the entire game in the ninth. Jeff alluded to it. He destroyed a two-run double off the wall in dead center field to kind of break the game open and seal a win. But looking up and down the West, it's well represented with BA top 100 2024 draft guys with Jonathan Bastine, Cameron Smith, Derek Bender, Travis Bazzana, our probably biggest cheese ball in personal 1-1, Carter Matheson, Trey Lipsy. I mean, they were 8 to 10 guys deep for the entirety of an all-star game, which is really hard to do. Even Grant Hussey, who, you know, he's a great player and probably be a top 5-7 round draft pick. As a reserve, he went 2-for-2. And then pitching-wise, it's kind of tough to isolate these pitching performances, because up here a lot of them, I mean, these guys are staying for the summer, so the coaching staffs up here are almost treating them like bullpens and side sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to look at them and you kind of have to take them with a grain of salt. But the guys who I think the listeners would have expected to have done well did really well. Cam Hill and Joey DiChiaro, the starters for the West and East squads, respectively, threw perfect first innings. DiChiaro, I'd say I was maybe the pitcher I was most impressed with on the day. It's unfortunate timing because he was recently released, but kind of what makes him great and what's made him so effective this summer is his feel and ability to spin the secondary stuff. He ripped off a couple of really good sliders. The changeup, I thought, flashed plus.
Yeah.
And then with Cam Hill, I mean, it's a really imposing 6'6 lefty coming at you from a difficult angle. I think I want to say he was up to 95, couple plus sliders. I think he only threw 9 pitches, so it's like you can't really talk about much. But he showed why he was the starter for the West. And then they were, other than a rough outing in the fourth by Garrett Coe, which really was – you know, an infield RBI single from Joe Oyama was the extent of the damage for the East. The West was lights out and played a really complete game. So I was impressed by them. And then on the East, again, a little thinner, which is a byproduct of guys coming and going, who plays in the All-Star game. Joe Oyama, deservedly so, taking home the MVP. As he's done night in and night out for Orleans, his fingerprints, again, were all over the box score for the East with the RBI infield single, a walk, a stolen base. Showed really well in the field. So impressive showing for Oyama.
Yeah, and I think one of the things, it's funny, you tweeted this during the game.
Oh, yeah.
About Caden Kent, but, like, these guys are swinging during this game, too, where I think, like, you know, like, you're going to be a little bit more passive in a normal game, in a win-loss scenario. You know, like, this is a game where you're going to get an opportunity to see pitchers putting the ball in the zone. There's not a lot of guys that are walking batters, not throwing strikes. And you're going to see batters swing. You're going to see batters maybe swing at some pitches that they wouldn't typically swing at. The other guy I wanted to mention, too, was Caden Bodine. Started, you know, the game behind the plate. I thought this was my first time seeing him receive. The two times I've seen Bodine previously, he's played third base, or maybe played third base once in DH. So this is my first time sort of seeing him receive. And I thought the receiving skills were pretty good back there.
Yeah, you know? He's solid. I think, like, for most, yeah, for the Coastal Battery, or not even Battery, the duo of Bodine and Bender, who they use behind the plate, I think they're offensive-minded and bat first. I'd say Bodine's the better defender of the two.
Yeah.
But most impressively is Bodine being a 2025 guy. And I think that next year he's got, you know, you can easily project on him having another monster season for Coastal, and he has Team USA written all over him, I think. So anything that we get up here next summer from Bodine, I will treat as a big added bonus. But he was excellent. And then circling back to the Caden Kent, point that you made, cause I had tweeted about it, but on Twitter, you know, you have the character limit, so you can't really actually explain stuff. So to set the stage, I think it was 4-1 West squad in the eighth inning. Caden Kent had a 3-1 count with two outs, and it was an easy spit for him at the plate, a really easy take. He could have had a walk if he wanted to, but instead of taking the free base, he swung aimlessly, not a poor swing decision. He just wanted to stay in the box and hit. He swung aimlessly at a changeup down and away, so he could stand and hit, ended up rolling over, but I couldn't have cared less, because that showed a lot, to me at least, about the compete levels with him, kind of his mentality in a game like this, how he wants to swing and stay in there and compete. So I was individuality, I'd say the Dene double, and then probably Caden Kent's 3-1 strike swinging were my two favorite moments of the game.
Yeah, I would agree. Dene double for sure. And the other guy I wanted to shout out here, too, is Jonathan Vasteen from Vanderbilt. Just a really impressive hit tool, quality at bats. I think he played the entire game as well, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yep, he started at, I think, short and then shifted to second.
Yeah, because I think they started Caulfield at second base,
they did,
right? Because they had Vince on it. They had a bunch of second basemen in the starting lineup, so they had to figure it out. But, you know, scored three times, you know, reached base three times, of course, had a hit, a couple of walks. So he actually had five plate appearances in that game. So really interesting player. Maybe not like the loudest tools, but
I think
the most important tool is the hit tool, and he's got that space.
He's just a really good baseball player.
Agreed.
And like, I saw him a few days before the All-Star game, and I tweeted about him. Really good actions at shortstop, twitchy athlete, can really handle the barrel. We saw that on full display. I think he had two barrels in his three official at-bats. Approach is advanced. I think he's got the tools and actions to stick at shortstop. And he was, again, I was impressed by him as I kind of expected I would be.
Yeah, and I got video of some of these arms and bats and stuff. It's just I lost a piece of my video editing equipment as I was transferring down here yesterday. So I got to find that somewhere in my luggage. But I got more videos that will go up with all this stuff, too. I think it's probably enough All-Star game home run derby talk.
Yeah, I'm kind of straining my brain a little bit. I guess the one thing is, and it's tough to say, like, oh, I wish that this were the case. But I kind of wish that we saw Bazzana at shortstop, either at the All-Star game or in Falmouth at all. He was in left for the game, but would have liked to have seen him on the dirt. But again,
agree.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of justify moving these other guys out, because you look at the lineup again, it's Vastein, Bryce Eblin, Cam Smith, Elijah Hanlon, Nick, like it's tough to kind of bump one of these guys. So hopefully in foul for the next week and a half, he'll be at second or short, whatever it might be. But I'm trying to think of the East. It was a quiet day for the East squad. I know the West is getting a lot of love. I think James Tibbs had probably the best all-around day of anyone. I know Rayon won the MVP, but he won the home run derby and then followed it up, had a RBI infield single to drive in the only run for the East. So hard to say he didn't have the best day in the East.
Yeah, I think it was just a matter of, like, the bats didn't really get going. Outside of that final inning, it was a close game. I didn't feel like, outside of maybe one appearance or here or there, that the East necessarily pitched poorly. How many of those runs came across a couple of innings? It was, I think, initially like Clark and Finley, and then I'm going to mess up this guy's name, but the guy from Princeton.
Chmielewski. There's no way it's pronounced Chmielewski. We'll go Chmielewski. With that. Yeah, but he had a tough appearance. So did Aiden Mosley against the All-Star game. Like, no.
Summer's here, and like probably a lot of you guys, we have a garden, and I love that ability to grow a tomato and basically pluck it from the vine and be eating it 20 minutes later. But our garden is very sporadic, and you probably have the same situation where you don't always have exactly what you want at the time you want it. Well, summer's here, and it's also a perfect time for HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. This summer, HelloFresh is here to take the work out of eating well. Reach your goals with delicious, calorie-smart, and protein-smart lunch and dinner options, plus new vegan recipes, too. You get farm-to-table quality with every HelloFresh box. HelloFresh's seasonal ingredients are picked at peak ripeness and travel from the farm to your doorstep in less than 7 days for fresh flavor in every bite, even when your garden doesn't provide it. I know that when I've cooked with HelloFresh, it is so easy that even I can do it. And trust me, if I can do it, I promise you, you can. HelloFresh gives the directions, gives you the exact ingredients, gives you the exact proportions to make a very, very good meal. Fresh, quick, and easy. Go to HelloFresh.com/16BA2023. That's 16BA2023 for 16 free meals plus free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/16BA, B as in boy, A as in alpha, 2023. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. I took 2 years of Spanish in high school. I took 3 more quarters of Spanish in college. And here I am. I work at a baseball publication, a baseball website, where speaking Spanish would be incredibly useful for my job. And I found that I don't retain almost any of it. But now I've got a different way to do this, a better way, with Babbel. Recently, I've been learning to speak Spanish with Babbel, and you can too. Because with Babbel, you can start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks. It's the second best way to learn a language. The best way is through immersion, where you live where the language is spoken natively and everyone's using it every day. But that's not possible for everyone. It's not possible for me. So what's the second best way to learn a language? Babbel, because you can start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. I'm one of those 1 in 5. You can check it off this summer. Why Babbel? Because it works. Instead of paying hundreds of dollars for a private tutor or fooling yourself with language apps that are little more than games, Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. One of the things I love about it is it gives you the language in a variety of ways. You see it visually, you hear it, but the one that I like the most is Babbel's advanced speech recognition tells you if you're saying the words properly. And if you're not, it helps you. And that's key for me. With Babbel, you can learn everything you need to have real-world conversations, from vocabulary words to culture, and all it takes is 10 minutes a day. So try Babbel. Here's our special limited-time deal for our listeners to get you started right now. Get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our podcast listeners at babbel.com/BA. That's 55% off at babbel.com/BA. That's BABBEL.com/BA. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I love staying busy, especially during the summer, going to games, concerts, shows, whatever is happening in my area. But what I don't love is making plans ahead of time. So shopping for tickets just got a little bit easier with TickPick, the original no-fee ticket marketplace that brings you the best prices for all the events that you love. And now TickPick is partnering with Zip, so you can shop now and pay later. Zip allows you to shop at TickPick and split your payment into easy installments. Visit TickPick.com and use promo code ZIP20, ZIP20, for $20 off your first purchase of $199 or more with Zip. Zip can only be used for U.S. purchases, and Zip may charge a fee at checkout. Certain merchant, product, goods, and service restrictions apply. See Zip's terms of service at www.zip.co-us. Loans through the Zip app are originated by WebBank, except for Zip-originated loans in Colorado, Nevada, Massachusetts, and Maryland.
Nobody, like, I hate to phrase it like this, but no one's going to look at these appearances and really care what they did.
No.
It's more just to, like, see guys flash stuff. And then Lanthier, I think, most impressively, recent transfer to Kansas from St. Cloud State, playing for Hyannis up here. Worked himself in and out of trouble, kind of sprayed the ball a little bit, walked the bases loaded, and then worked himself out of trouble. He got a strikeout and then a timely 6-4-3 double play. So impressive job by Lanthier and really everyone on the West. I'd say it was a loud showing. And then Bryce Cunningham slamming the door with back-to-back strikeouts.
Yeah, for sure. I thought Farrity, too, I thought was interesting because he's got really good stuff. He's obviously a West Side guy, but somebody didn't mention before. Yeah, you know, it was an interesting all-around day. I don't think it's anything crazy to say that the bats were more exciting than the pitching was. But that's kind of been the MO of the Cape Cod League, particularly over the last couple of years, you know?
Yeah.
We see a lot of impressive hitting prospects and just the nature of pitching and, you know, injuries and injury prevention in terms of limiting innings, etc. It's just a much more difficult thing to sort of balance. But I'm going to talk a little bit about the last week in the Cape Cod League and where we're heading standings-wise heading into the final 2 weeks now, right?
Yeah, the final like week and a half. I think
yeah,
final
10 games, maybe yeah. 8 games. Yeah.
But no, standings-wise, largely this – actually, you know what? Not really. In the West – or excuse me, in the East, we'll start. YD is still holding down first place. They've kind of taken a – I don't want to say stranglehold, but they have some breathing room in first. They lead the second place Orleans Firebirds, who have picked it up, to surge into second place. They lead by a point margin of 41 to 34, which is 3.5 games. Soon followed by Harwich at 31 points, and then Brewster at 28 with Chatham in the basement with 22. But I will say one thing about Chatham. Since Coach Lees has taken over, there has been – new life breathed into that team and that lineup and showing fight and competing in every game, most notably last week against Kituat. Kituat had taken, I think it was a 12-2 lead in the sixth inning or so. And I mean, at that point, in whether it's the Cape League or any baseball, you can kind of write that one off most times. But Chatham, I'd never seen anything like it. Every single ground ball they hit, every single kind of loop into the outfield, found a hole or found some grass. They were able to chip away, tie it at 12. The game would get called due to darkness, much to the chagrin, I'd say, of Chatham, because when it got called, they had the bases loaded and just one out. So kind of the trajectory of that game was not looking like it was going to end in a tie. If the listeners are picking up what I was going to put, what I'm putting down, I think Chatham was probably going to win that game. But nonetheless, prior to Chatham coming back, teams were 0 and 146 in the point streak era dating back to 2011 when trailing by 10 or more runs. Honestly, unsurprisingly, Chatham can now say that they stand alone with the only team to not lose. So that was really impressive. And then in the West, Kituat again, as they've done since opening day, they are in first place. But I will say, they're the first team in the league to clinch a playoff berth. They're 23-10-1 with 47 points. However, Hyannis is right on their heels at 21-12-2 at 44 points. I'd say right now they're the hottest team in the league. I think winners of 10 of their last 11 running a 4-game winning streak. They're getting hot at the perfect time. Cameron Smith and Zach York, that dynamic duo. Mostly Cam Smith, I'd say, because he's been here for the entire season, and I think he's a legit, at least for my money's worth, an MVP candidate at this point, hitting .344 with 9 doubles, 5 home runs, a trio of triples and 19 RBIs. I think at this point he's firmly established himself as a potential first-round pick in 24. And then behind, it's really Kituit, 47, Hyannis, 44, and then everyone else, I think. Falmouth is in third with 36 points at 17 and 16 and 2. Bourne is in fourth with 35 at 17, 16, and 1. And then Wareham, I think at this point, even regardless of Chatham's point total, they have 4 points over Chatham. I think that Wareham at this point is struggling the most of anyone in the Cape League. They've had a lot of departures in their key pieces with Tommy Splain and Nick McLean, unintentional rhyme. And really, their big pieces have kind of left. So they're really struggling. And I think that the playoffs, again, as I've said for the last couple of weeks, I think we have 7 of these 8 teams. I think that for some reason, Chatham can still maybe sneak their way in. But I think that the playoff picture is all but set. Really impressive showing from Kituit and Hyannis, just how it was in 22. And then also YD, who is always really solid in the East with Coach Pickler. And then Coach Nicholson's Firebirds. I keep an eye on them in the East as a somewhat dark horse.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing with the East is it's anybody's game out there still, really, for those 4 teams. I suppose, like, YD's probably going to win the division at this point. They're up by enough points, it wouldn't be a shock. I mean, certainly Orleans is a shot to catch them, probably less of a shock for Harwich and Brewster. But once we get into the playoffs, any of those teams advancing really wouldn't shock me. No. I mean, if Brewster comes in as the 4th seed and wins the East Division,
I don't think
anybody would bat an eye. I mean, we've seen it time and time again. Jamie knows how to get, Coach Shevchuk knows how to get his guys up for big games.
Yeah.
They buy him.
No, I was going to say, in a league that now is like, I guess like, it's so much of it now is like departures and weathering the storm. Mm-hmm. Coach Shevchuk, like you said, most impressively, he gets the best out of his guys when it matters most. So like if Brewster finishes, and conceivably they could finish as high as the 2, because Orleans at 34 as the 2 seed right now, and Brewster in the 4th spot at 28, that's only 3 games. And while it's tough to make up, they could absolutely do it. So a lot to still work out in the East. And then I think in the West, it's really just going to come down to who is 1 and 2 and who is 3 and 4, because I think either Kituit or Hyannis will be the 1 and 2 seed respectively. And then with Falmouth and Bourne being the 3 and 4 respectively. So I know where's not mathematically out of it, but I am reading the tea leaves a little bit as to where we might end up. So exciting races at the top, but I think the playoff picture is all but set. There aren't going to be any. Actually, you know what? Yeah, playoff picture is all but set, I'd say, except for 1 team.
Yeah, I agree. So we'll see how that shakes out. But I think just in terms of, we're heating up, we're heading into the playoffs right now. We have a good idea of who's going to be there. And, we're not necessarily sure what these teams are going to look like, because these rosters, especially right, the next few days, we'll sort of know, who's sticking around, who's got some time left. But we saw a ton of departures over the last 4 or 5 days across the entire league. That certainly has an impact. But I guess before we start to wrap up here, who's your front runner for MVP right now?
That's a great question, because before we recorded, I was actually looking at it. And you have Hunter Hines, who what he lacks in average, he makes up for in, I'd say, home runs and RBIs. He's leading the league by a decent margin at 10 home runs. He's the first player to hit double-digit home runs since Bobby Dalbec hit 12 in 2015, and it is not out of the realm of possibility that Hines could get to 13 with the way he's been swinging the bat. He also leads the league with 36 RBIs. So I think it's hard to not have the leading home run hitter and leading RBI guy kind of sort of up near the top of the MVP race. I think Cole Mathis is in there with hitting .322 with 7 doubles, 7 home runs, 2nd in RBI with 28. He's also pitched a lot for Kituit. And then I think Cameron Smith, who I talked about a couple minutes ago, is very much in the thick of it. And arguably one of the, I'd say one of the final candidates for it, hitting 344, a league leading 9 doubles. He's also got 5 home runs to his name, 3 triples, 19 RBI. And he's doing it as a true freshman, which I think is really impressive. And then I think is, because how the Cape League does it is what they do is they do an MVP, which is kind of just looking at an ice. And oh my gosh, I didn't mention.
I was about to jump in.
Derek Bender is obviously on that list too, leading the league, hitting 385, 6 doubles, 4 home runs, and 21 RBIs. And then also in the East, ironically, the 2 MVPs, Joichiro Oyama, spark plug from Orleans, hitting 369 with 8 doubles, a league-leading 6 triples, a pair of home runs, and 11 RBIs. So I think that those are your 5 or 6 names, however many I talked about, to kind of focus in on as we head into the last 10 days of the season. And then how the Cape League does it is what they do is they also do a top pro prospect award, which is voted on by the scouts. And I think I speak for both of us when I say that we would name Travis Bazana the top pro prospect in the league. He's hitting 320, 3 doubles, 3 home runs, a pair of triples, 20 RBI. He's walking more than he's striking out. And from this chair, he's my personal 1-1 for 2024. So the scouts think they're – if people agree upon a better prospect than Travis Bazana at this point, I would be fascinated to hear both who it is and their arguments, because I think that he far and away is the top prospect in this league.
Yeah, and I think he's a top prospect based on conversations I know you and I have had with scouts over the last couple of weeks. I think that's the direction it's going. You know, you ask about Bazana or he comes up, it's like, yeah, this guy is unbelievable. You know, very unique player. Wow, is he a lot of fun? Those are some of the quotes that I've gotten on the initial question. So I think scouts feel that he is the best pro prospect. I think Cam Smith has made a case for best pro prospect as well. So big body. You know, I don't know where he plays long term. He made a really nice play actually going back in the ball in the All-Star game. Sort of a little bit of range there at third base.
He's got a plus arm, easy plus.
He's got a good arm. I mean, he played shortstop in high school, which wasn't that long ago. So really talented player there. And it's a big league body. I mean, he is 6'3", 6'4". Yeah, exactly. He passes the eye test through and through. And I think to his credit, you know, the first night I saw Hyannis and I sort of came back and was like, this guy's going to strike out a ton. He hasn't struck out that much. I think when we did, one of the most impressive things I thought when we wrote up the hot sheet last week is he had whatever the third best week in the league, according to us, had a ton of power. I think he had like 4 or 5, maybe even 6 extra base hits and 1 strikeout that whole week, playing every single game, seeing a ton of at-bats at, you know, the top, you know, that lineup for Hyannis. So it's like, he's, you know, a top 4 guy in that lineup. He's seen a ton of at-bats. He's been really productive, and he's been consistently productive throughout the season because he has made 3 consecutive hot sheets. We'll see if he makes the one this week. It depends what he does. So, I mean, he's heated up throughout the season too. Like, he started kind of slow and has really started to get it going.
Yeah, and I think most impressively with Smith is because I think that we left our first Smith look. We got it at different times, granted, but we left our first Smith look kind of thinking, okay, I can kind of see why he struck out a lot at Florida State. The approach at times is inconsistent. There is swing and miss and struggle with spin. I think what the most impressive part about Smith is, because so many times you see a regression in production with guys, you see freshmen in particular really get eaten alive up here, is he's come into his own and blossomed up here. The approach has gotten better. The swing decisions have gotten better. Mm-hmm. The operation as a whole has gotten better. We've seen him cut out his stride with 2 strikes and kind of just let his hands work. And, I mean, the natural physicality he has, he can still generate quality impact. And we saw in the All-Star game, he got into a 2-strike count, wind up the base, went no stride, just put an easy swing on an elevated fastball and sizzled the line drive to, I'd say, medium deep center field, which is a huge graveyard. So I'd say – top pro prospect, it's down to Bazana and Smith for me. I'd give the nod to Bazana, but Smith certainly in there. And then I think to go onto the pitching side of things, they only name one most valuable pitcher. And with innings limits and guys getting shut down and pulled, but so many guys can qualify for the award at this point in the season. And I think that, like, barring something crazy and unforeseen, it's Cam Hill's award to lose at this point.
Yeah.
He's a true starter. 28 innings pitched, 38 Ks, just 11 walks, 0.96 ERAs, allowed just 3 earned runs all summer. Fastball up to 96, slider and split change have both flashed plus. And then I think that they also name a reliever of the year. And I think based off of this, we have our pitcher and reliever of the year kind of set with Derek Clark at Orleans. He's thrown 10 games, only one start, 29 Ks to 8 walks in 27 innings with a 1.3 ERA, pitchability specialist. I think that those are the clear-cut guys right now. Again, barring an atrocious last start or appearance for some of these guys, I think that the pitching awards are basically set in stone.
Yeah, I would be surprised if either of those guys don't win, because as you said, it's pretty set in stone. And based on the point that we're at in the season, there's just too much heavy lifting for anybody to really catch up to either of those guys, unless they decided to throw like a 7-inning no hitter in a game that's shortened by rain and sun or something like that. Darkness. I said sun, darkness. Like I don't know how you could catch either of those guys. I think there's a little bit more debate maybe for best pro prospect and that sort of thing. But it seems like it's those guys.
I guess the only other guy, I'd say reliever of the year is Cam Schulke, the multi-slot pitcher, I should say, who is going to be holding down Mississippi State's bullpen this spring, pitching for Kituit. 10 appearances. The ERA is more than double what Clark's is at 3.75, but he does lead the league with 39 strikeouts. No disrespect to Cam, I'd still probably give the reliever of the year award to Clark. He's been so good for the entire season for Orleans, and he's been their best arm. So Hill and Clark would be my picks for pitcher and reliever of the year, respectively.
There we go. We've got all the awards figured out. We know what's going to happen in the playoffs and everything else. So there you go. Without further ado, why don't we wrap this up? It's been the Cape Cod Pod. This is Jeff. That's Pete. And we're live and get to it.